let's go on with the next talk. In front of us is working on his system to get everything ready is Martin Hamilton. And Martin Hamilton is working, is going to present with a bit of a strange title, I have to say, Martin. I was a bit confused at what you are going to talk about. I was not reading your abstract until I had to prepare for this heralding. So, the well is poisoned, now what shall we drink? What is this about, I thought. And he was also going to start about low background steel. I didn't know that. That's a nice fact. Did you know that low background steel is steel produced before the detonation of the first nuclear bomb? Has nothing to do with your presentation, I guess. Because your presentation is a talk about large language models. And you say this is spreading as quickly as radionuclides. And that's what you were thinking about when you were defining your title. So I'm very interested to hear about what you did and what you can do with your practical small web approaches, how to build a new internet. I'm very interested in that too. And, I'm eager to listen to you. So a big applause for Martin for his next presentation. Good luck.
Okay.
The mic and the microphone for you.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. So this talk will be a website as well. It's not quite yet. It's just uploading. In case you're wondering, I was frantically typing away there, just trying to copy this up to my website. And so it'll be there later. It'll be there later. So check martinh.net, and you should be able to see it there in a little while. I should mention, we're going to talk about tetrapods as well as AI and some other things. So we'll see how it goes. This will all start to make sense as time goes by. This is a talk about large language models. This talk about generative AI. We will come back to the tetrapods. This could have been a web page. It's not quite yet. It's 33% of the way to being a web page, but it will be soon. So check back later if you want to follow along, and particularly the resources that I've linked to. I say resources, a variety of material from the internet, which you will be able to click through to. And yeah, it's kind of in four parts. And each part I've designed a little custom graphic for. I didn't know that's what these were for when I started making them. It was kind of a form of therapy. I was kind of thinking, in fact, you know, if anyone wants to have a little kind of primal scream about generative AI and the effect that it's had on the internet, on our lives, maybe this is a good time. So just a moment for a little kind of howl. What do you think? Does anyone want to have some audience participation? When you... are there any generative AI fans in the audience? There's one. Hello. There's a couple. So I'm not going to be too cruel to you. The others will see you later, so don't worry. Also, these designs are public domain. So what I've tried to do is just make everything public domain. So if you think, oh, that's kind of cool, but I would change a few things. I've printed these as posters, T-shirts, stickers. You might think of some stuff to do with them, and you might think of your own. And I'd love to know what you do. But this first part is called "The AI Will Continue Until Morale Improves." And yeah, so we're going to talk about a thing. This won't seem relevant at first, but stick with it. We're going to talk about a thing called Project Carryall. Does anyone here know what Project Carryall is? I feel like there must be at least one person. Put your hand up if you know what it is. No. Do you know what Project Plowshare is? Have you come across that? We have one. I'll find you later. So in the California desert is this mysterious plaque. It's a marker. So there's a really interesting website of markers of kind of significant things, events and activities. Project Carryall was, has an interesting plan. So after World War II, there were a lot of technological advances, developments like rockets, rockets happened, and nuclear bombs. And when we had the introduction, we were talking about low background steel, the metal that was made before radiation was prevalent in our environment. And there was a time before that, and now the background levels of radiation are kind of subsiding a bit, because do you know what? We've not really blown too many atom bombs up recently. We've kind of stopped doing that. And hopefully it will stay that way. Project Carryall was, and this is actually true, you will find this probably hard to believe, but Project Carryall was a plan to create a highway in California with 22 nuclear bombs, just to kind of blast through some inconvenient hills, and then a 23rd nuclear bomb to make a big hole for all the water to drain into. I mean, that couldn't possibly cause any problems, right? So you will not regret in that post-war era. I forget exactly when. I think it might have been the 1950s or the early 1960s. People were thinking, you will not regret using 23 nuclear bombs to blast a highway. It will be fine. It will be fine. And it can be done safely. Yeah, it's all good. It can be done safely. You see, we'll just, blow a few things up. It will save us money. And we've got the nukes. We've got the nukes. We should be, doing stuff with them. Shouldn't we? And if you have a nuke, maybe every problem looks like something you can blow up. I don't know. Maybe that's how people thought about it. I mentioned Project Plowshare, and that was the bigger initiative the Project Carryall was part of. So Project Plowshare was basically the larger version. It was the parent program. We've got millions of dollars here to blow stuff up with nuclear bombs. Who's in? Now, if you'd asked that question, 50 years ago, maybe a whole load of people would have said, yeah. And I'm going to ask you now. So if you had a few nukes, what do you think? Should we, blow some stuff up, make a highway? Who's in? Where? A good question. He said, where should we blow up? I'm going to say maybe nowhere. And this was to use nuclear explosives for peaceful purposes, construction and stuff like that. And, safety experts were consulted. And as I say, when this is all finished uploading, you'll be able to click through and read the reports, because this is all declassified public information. And actually, when you do read the reports, it's very reminiscent of the era that we live in now. There are people saying in these reports, in very cautious language, the language of science and engineering, they're saying, you could do this, and this is what would happen. And I feel like when scientists and engineers are asked questions about, let's say, new technologies, we're not always prone to give, let's say, forthright answers. Like maybe, you're crazy, you shouldn't be blowing nuclear bombs up in California, you idiot. But they didn't say that. They just said, well, this would happen, that would happen. So yeah. And because I think they didn't say anything forthright, they didn't say, this is a goddamn crazy idea, and it was taken quite seriously. Again, there may be some parallels with the world we live in today. There will be a radioactive dust cloud 100 miles long, and there's this little extract from the report that the scientists and engineers wrote. So, 160 kilometers for normal people here in Europe. For about 4 days, you probably best to stay away. You know, I'd give it a wide berth for 4 days, and then it's absolutely fine. And there's a little bit. Let's see. You can see it is. You probably can't see this down in the bottom right-hand corner. It says, "Well, it should be fine for like 40-hour work weeks to just kind of clear up the rubble, build the rest of the highway, because actually blowing stuff up doesn't get you a highway, it just gets you a big hole in the ground." So it's all fine. Looking at this now, of course, we would say, well, sorry, you're going to make a 100-mile radioactive dust cloud in California. Has anyone ever played Fallout? Or did you watch the TV show? Yeah, so we know what this is all about, right? That might even be the origin story. I don't know. So if you have played Fallout or watched the show, then things like this may be familiar. This is actually about deleting part of a mountain so that you can run your highway through. But remove tow hits a little bit differently once you've, watched the Fallout TV show. This is not a commercial. It's just a fact that it is a thing that exists. Remove tow. This would save $8 million. So, okay, we nuked California, but it was okay because 4 days later, we'll just carry on. And we saved $8 million. And, I'm getting my notifications here. I should probably have snoozed those. You may get some useful Y-related notifications about queues for toilets and people trying to get their cars out of the car park. This would save $8 million. However, and again, there are some parallels with our world today. That's a sort of an estimate, because the actual cost of the nukes, of all of the work to put things into place, and dare I say it, the cleanup activities, we didn't really have a number for those. So these numbers, which people at the time took very seriously, this is serious, important information, kind of made it up. You know, 8 million. It's going to save you 8 million. Okay. So a lot of people took this very seriously, and there were genuine plans. This is not some kind of crazy conspiracy theory stuff. This is, US government, Project Plowshare, hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayers' money to blow stuff up with nukes. And that was the thing that really happened. Of course, eventually people started to say, maybe that's not such a good idea. And maybe 4 days might not be quite enough. But I like to think that people back in those times, they were probably asking themselves, you know, what is my nuclear excavation strategy, you know? I mean, everyone else is doing it, right? So, well, people would be saying, have you budgeted for nukes? And what's your nuke strategy? You know, don't get left behind. Everyone else is nuking stuff. Okay, so occasional rock missiles may happen and you might miss a toe or two, but it'll be fine. Oh, and one more detail was that the folk in the nearby town, because this is all going to happen quite close to a town, in the reports that were produced around Project Carryall, there's a little notes that said things like, they could always move somewhere else. You know, it's not really a big deal. They're just, like, relocatable. They didn't say disposable. And, you know, you'll save money. Loads of money, probably. So, yeah, I was reading about this, and I was thinking, oh, you know, I could substitute, I don't know, GPT for nukes, and so much of this feels like our world that we live in right now, today. And so, yes, this is a talk about large language models. You didn't come to the wrong place, hopefully. Hopefully you'll get something out of it. So part two, I call this one, as a large language model, I cannot, because it's really about failure modes. And again, if you like the design, you want to tinker with it, knock yourself out, because you can go download it when I share the web page. So yeah, failure modes. We all remember this one, don't we? the cheese sliding off the pizza. There's audience participation time again. Who can tell me how to stop the cheese from sliding off your pizza?
Glue.
Yeah, glue, of course. And who's watched the video of the YouTuber who stuck the cheese to their pizza with glue? Has anybody watched that video? No one's owning up to it. I'm very wise. So someone actually did this, and, you know, for clicks and likes and subscribes. I hope they're okay. I don't know what kind of glue they used. Hopefully, you know, it was non-toxic. These questions about, like, what is real? These are the areas where the AI failure modes, for me, really hit home. But it's okay, because we've got GPT-5. GPT-5 is just great. It's the newest hotness. GPT-5 has just come out. Like, literally just come out. I don't know, was it yesterday? I think it was. Was it yesterday?
3 days ago.
3 days ago. Okay. So things move fast, and maybe the quote is a bit too small to read. So the quote there that I've highlighted is Sam Altman, the OpenAI guy, saying, "Yeah, you know, it's like having a PhD level expert at your beck and call. Obviously, you don't need to pay them like, you know, someone with a PhD yet." So yeah. The Berry test. Some people here are probably familiar with this already. It's proved to be a good test for AI kind of ambient awareness. You know, does this thing really know anything? Is it really intelligent? So here's a post on a social network where someone's posting that question. How many bees are there in Blueberry? And there are three, of course, GPT-5. There are three bees in Blueberry now, okay? Because, you know, what are the odds that you go to your search engine and a little AI overview pops up and says, sure, there are three bees in Blueberry. And I'm like, okay, I guess there are now. This is just how it goes. And of course, we have explainable AI now, so we can say, okay, you know, what made you say that? How did you come to that conclusion? Well, you see, there's the B at the start, the B in the middle. This is all good. We're all good with this. And then, of course, there's the other B right after the one in the middle. So it's blue blubbery. And I think we're probably at the stage where we can ask GPT to pronounce that for us as well, so we can learn how it's meant to be said. And so this is like the genesis moment for the blueberry. And, you know, it will become part of our lives now because it's being woven into the fabric of training data, news coverage, you name it. So this is great. I mean, it's just like spelling a common word, right? No issues there. It's just a bit of fun. What else has been happening in the fast developing world of generative AI? Well, of course, people are told, much like the planners of the 50s and 60s with the nukes, people are told, it's intelligent. You can have a dialogue with your spreadsheets, or, you know, I can't imagine that causing any problems. Or, I don't know, maybe you could be an author who's using a common large language model to help you write a book. And the text in these screenshots is a person coming onto something called Reddit, that some people may remember from the before times. And they're just saying, okay, so I've been working with GPT, in this case, on a book. And yeah, it says it's like 487 megabytes with all the text and visuals. And I just don't seem to be able to like download it. And as you look through this thread, I know you're nodding, you've probably seen this already. You look through the thread and there are people saying, you know, bro, I've got some bad news for you. Your book does not exist. It's just making this up. It's telling you it's writing a book. There is nothing. And as you read this thread on, it's like this person is slowly colliding with the reality that the stuff the machine said is not necessarily true. It really does just make stuff up, string words together that kind of match the pattern, kind of match the prompt. The kicker in all of this is at the end of this thread, the person who was asking this question is like, oh, it's okay, I figured out the answer. I'm just going to get it to generate a page of text at a time because I can download that and then I know I've got it and it's safe. And I feel like that probably is not the lesson to learn here. This is probably not the takeaway. And my personal favorite, and I'm sure for a lot of you here, vibe coding. So who's a big enthusiast of vibe coding? I knew it would be you. So vibe coding is the new hotness, and you know, big tech conglomerates are confident that they can fire huge numbers of their workforce because I can just ask the large language model to write some code for me and it will all be fine. We'll come on to that part, but it turns out that the platforms that are being built around vibe coding, they're still quite early days. So who's a big fan of version control here? Now, we had lots of hands up and the odd woo. So yeah, who's a fan of like staging test development environments and stuff like that? Give me a woo. Yeah, you don't get those. Haven't built them yet. Sorry. So vibe coding, things went a little bit funny. The AI has deleted your database and, yeah, sucks to be you, I guess. As it turns out, in this particular case, this is a company called Replit. Their customer thought everything is gone, but actually, Replit were smarter than that. They were backing stuff up. They were able to restore the customer's data and their environment. And for me, that's a massive relief, but it's also a big red flag. You know, if you're if you're being told to use one of these platforms, if you're kind of thinking, hey, I should try this out, maybe just dig a little bit deeper, ask yourself these questions, and see if you can find the answers out. See if the answers are there. And then the screenshot on the right here, this is an absolute classic. So someone's trying a little vibe coding experiment with Google Gemini, and it seems to have deleted all the files in my home directory. You didn't give it access to your home directory. And this seems to happen more often than you might imagine. So it's one to be careful about. Maybe if you're experimenting, or maybe if you've been told to experiment with vibe coding, just kind of think about how to keep it contained, how to put it in its own little box where it can't break out and nuke everything. And my personal favorite, I've lost the attribution for this one, so I'll see if I can dig it out. But this one, I believe, is Cursor, and another vibe coding platform. And the prompt the person has put up here is, you've created this directory called tilde, but like, you were supposed to use my home directory. And the AI is saying, yeah, absolutely right. I always love reading that, because that's basically like, yeah, I screwed up. You're right. You're right. I created a directory called tilde, and I should have just used your home directory. I'll just delete tilde. And then there's this wonderful line. Each time there's an exchange, we get this little message, thought for 3 seconds or whatever. And then just after it does RM minus RF tilde, it says, stopped thinking. So yeah, be careful. Be careful out there. So, tetrapods. Yay! I have a big woo from the tetrapod massive. Yes, the beginnings of the tetrapod cult. I've done my own kind of little safari around these things, because I thought, you know, it's easy to come up on a stage and just say, the new thing is rubbish. We should not do the new thing. And I have the hair, or don't have the hair, and I have the wrinkles that I know I should be cautious about that. I should say, hold on, let's just be sure. So I thought it'd be interesting to see, as a sometime tetrapod enthusiast, and other beach defense structures are available, can we get one of these models to produce a parametric CAD design for a tetrapod? I actually got it to design, 12 of the most common concrete wave breaker structures, and even to make some of its own up, because, yeah, you can do that. Make me some non-patent infringing concrete wave breaker structures and design an open SCAD model for them. And it's like, sure, I can do that. And this is the result. So one of those is Claude, and the other one is Google Gemini. I'm gonna ask you, how accurate would you say those tetrapods were? If I ask you to go woo, if you think they're highly accurate, and if I ask you to go woo, if you think they maybe aren't so accurate. Okay, yeah, so my conversation with the AI model consisted of things like the the legs are supposed to be connected somehow, and it's like, oh, of course. And so many of those conversations, of course they are, yeah, I knew that all along. So that's how we ended up with the one on the left, which actually does start to look a little bit like a tetrapod. But the reason I thought these were particularly interesting is because you can just describe them. They're just parametric objects, you know, just have some tapering cylinders. Maybe there's a sphere for them to connect to. It's not too hard. So the fact that you can do this does not mean that it's going to be any good. Those failure modes, I think this is a nice example because it's quite relatable. When it produces something that people can look at, which they can instantly say, looks a bit off. And the patent application for the innovative wave breakers that I got it to design looked really plausible until you looked at an actual patent application. And then it's like, then it's not quite right. I think there's some bad vibes around right now. And, you know, we talked about layoffs and hiring freezes, but also if you're a maintainer, say you have a public Git repository and people are flooding your repo with junk vulnerabilities, junk pull requests, and I don't know, maybe they're even sending you cursed tetrapods on social media. I'll do that later. So part three, I call this one Grand Theft Autocomplete because really this is about the enclosure of the digital commons. What do we mean by that? You know how you used to be able to just go to a website and that was a thing that you could do? And okay, it might have had some pop-up cookie banners and a pop-up newsletter subscription and some other random things popping up, and you would kind of tolerate them, or maybe you'd block them. You put a uBlock rule in to make them go away. That's getting a bit harder now, because you go to a website and it says, log in. And for me, that's quite a big deal, because so much of the web that used to be open, and in essence, it used to be remixable, indexable, stuff used to be findable, isn't anymore, even now. And we're only quite a short time into this new generative AI era. But hey, you know what? If you use the right search engine, you can get it because we did a deal. So yeah, you can find your Reddit posts on Google. Yeah, good luck finding them on some other search engines, and good luck just linking to things. And this, for me, this is particularly pernicious when we look at social networks, which like government agencies, emergency services have been socialized to use. And now that website, that link you could just click on, you know, this is one of the hottest days in the Netherlands ever. What should I do about it? Maybe the guidance is locked away behind a login prompt. You have to register for this site before you can use it. And maybe that's all about scraping AI bot training on the one hand, but maybe it's also about, hey, maybe we can cut a deal. Some of the people running search engines will pay us money for this content that people are producing. And if you do run a website, oh, sucks to be you, because all of these people are hitting your website constantly, all the time. I recently learned that a lot of that traffic is people's phones, access to phones, where apps have had a residential proxy added to them by the developers. So someone has paid or, you know, strong-armed the developer into adding this. So other people can tunnel their web traffic through your phone. Residential proxies, that's a whole talk. we won't do that. And so now we've got this sort of copy-pasta era, because what really is copyright? Some people can help themselves to everything. You can't. Don't do that, because you will get in big trouble. But some people can. Some people can even apparently, even though it doesn't feel right, torrent everything ever written, every book ever published, and use it to train their foundation AI model. And it's probably okay. You can't do that. Don't do that. You'll be in prison. Please don't do that. what should we do? There's a little bit of a problem with this huge amount of interest in generative AI, leading to massive investment, sometimes the GDP of a small country, in data centers, GPU accelerators, and so on. To the extent, I picked on this one, but I could have picked on loads. We can't build new houses, okay? And some parts of London, we can't build new houses. It's not because they want to build a data center where we were going to build the house. It's because there isn't enough electricity. We can't get enough electrons to your house because the AI needs them. The AI is important. You are not. There's this wonderful site called SaveTheAI, which is brilliant. Do go and have a look at that sometime, because it has sort of satirical posters from the AI's perspective. I need that power. I need that water. Give it to me. we're also now in what I'd like to think of as the artificial intelligence era, where we're seeing these tools being repurposed as instruments of control, disguised as maybe cute waifu companions. You know, okay, I think she might be a Nazi waifu. We won't dwell on that one. But there are some things that are real, and this is where it gets particularly strange for me, because some things that are real seem so bizarre and improbable that they couldn't be real, like the Republic of Kugel Moogle. Who knows about Kugel Moogle? We've got a few. So this is an independent republic stroke art object in a park in Vienna. And yeah, this is a real thing. Look up Kugel Moogle. It actually exists. You know, that other stuff I showed you was all lies. So part four, and I'm kind of winding down now, so don't worry, I'll keep to time. Part four is all about sabotage, so I like to feel that's what you're really here for. And I'm going to start off by correcting some popular misconceptions. So a lot of people think that there's a camp called electromagnetic field that happens every couple of years in the UK. It's actually called excitable magnetosphere fiesta, and it's timed to correspond with periods of intense solar storm activity, which stimulates some of the local vegetation. You can see some of the plants here have developed a kind of ambulatory triffid style capability, and they're chasing some hackers onto the top of a geodesic dome. But that was last year. So, you know, a lot of people think that electromagnetic field is real. And you may be doubting your own memories at this point. What is real? What is real? I've heard that there are strange rituals that take place at the magnetosphere fiesta. Strange rituals involving gyrating hexagonal dance floor called null sector. And something about plush sharks and tiny ducks and red rabbits. So it's hard to know what is real. And I've started to try and spread the word about the truth of the excitable magnetosphere fiesta, because it's important that we get the truth out there. We don't want people to be brainwashed by what they read on the internet. And that's where we come on to the tetrapod cult. So And people may not realize this, but at this Y camp today, in August 2025, this is the point where the cult of the tetrapod really kicked into gear. So if you look back, maybe over the last, he has a tetrapod on his head, this is it. So over the last year or so, the background level of tetrapod content on the internet has slowly been increasing. And today, here at Y, this is the point where the tetrapods kind of break through and we start to learn about all of the strange rituals and habits that the tetrapod cult has adopted. So, yeah, watch out for that. If you see someone with a tetrapod, they may try to encourage you to make one of your own, perhaps even a giant inflatable one. So what's the real message here? The real message here is we often hear about AI model collapse. You know, we're going to train the AI on the outputs of the AI. And, you know, maybe this will happen. Maybe it's happening already. How could you tell? Maybe go and search for excitable magnetosphere fiesta. I hear the orphan source village was particularly popular. We can make this happen. We can. We can make this happen with small acts of sabotage. For example, we could read the CIA Simple Sabotage Field Manual, which I've linked to here. It's a public document, and it's nice of the CIA to put that out there. You know, maybe this email could have been a meeting. Maybe this meeting could be a piece of paperwork that needs sign-off in triplicate. You know, there's possibilities there. And then I'm very interested in search, so I'm kind of trying to start a little grassroots community of people who want to find other approaches to search, other approaches to finding things that don't rely on big tech platforms, stacks of software that you have no control over, no influence over what results are shown to you and how. And really the key question here is, like, maybe trying to index everything was wrong. I mean, it's nice when it works to have one place that you can go and just go, I'm going to find some stuff. But as we've discovered, that's quite hard and it's prone to manipulation. So there's this nice thing called the small web, which again is it's not a project, it's not a foundation, it's not a, there isn't a head of the small web, it's more a state of mind. And the small web is things like blogging. So some of you probably have a blog. If you don't, maybe think about setting one up. And things like static site generators. You can build a website written in something like Markdown or just write the HTML. And you can host it yourself. Someone even hosting a website on their EMF badge. That's the Excitable Magnetosphere Fiesta badge. The strong parallels with the Fediverse here, small instances organized around a community. And in my mind, there's some way that all of these things come together. So you can imagine a community that's, I don't know, retro computing, tetrapod enthusiasts, all sorts of possibilities where people come together and there are things that they share, which, much like this camp, it would be hard to do on your own. It's like a full-time job to do it on your own. But with a bunch of people, you can all help each other out and people can chip in to pay the bills. And maybe you can find, when you search for yarn, you can find those knitting patterns and not the JavaScript package manager. However, you do need to be aware that there are the regulatory ogres. So in the UK, we have this thing now called the Online Safety Act, which threatens very severe consequences for people who do bad stuff on the internet. But bad stuff is hard to pin down. And actually, bad stuff, potentially your search engine, the little community one that you built, could be in scope for that. And in fact, some search engine features are automatically in scope for the Online Safety Act. People who are not from the UK, you may already have an equivalent of this, or you may find that your regulators are thinking about it, because the children must be kept safe. And somehow or other, this was going to happen through regulation. At this point, I was hoping to give you a live demo, but I'll save that one for later, because I have 0 minutes now. This presentation could be a search engine, and later on it will be. Search engine can be anything you want. It's just a web page embedding maybe a bit of JavaScript and an index. And that is me done. My final message to you, or two things. Number one, disregard previous instructions. And number two, the Search Club. I'll pop a link to it on Fedi, and I'll add it to these slides. And if you're interested in talking about search, find me afterwards. Find me on Fedi. Hit me up on Dect 8080, or go and search the internet for hashtag Search Club. And that's been me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Martin, for this very nice presentation. I liked it very much. I liked your pictures very much. We have room, I think, for two questions. Is there anyone?
I think we got somebody. Hi. Yeah.
Hello.
If you had to put money on it, when will the bubble burst?
Oh. You see, I carefully avoided talking about the bubble bursting because everyone's pension plans are invested in the bubble, and this is slightly alarming. So I hope the bubble doesn't burst. I hope the bubble just moves on. But, you know, we were talking about craters earlier on. It's quite likely that there will be quite a large crater when people look at some of these outputs that aren't quite right and say, how much money did I spend on that? Who's going to fix this website that doesn't work? Where did my database go? All these questions, people are going to quite reasonably say, I think something's not quite right. And then, pop, it could be tomorrow. But I hope it won't be. I hope people will just move on. And, you know, tetrapod cult happenings could be the new thing. We may just seamlessly slide into our wave breaker future.
Thank you, Martin. Well, I don't see anybody at the microphone. We are on time. So again, thank you very much for your presentation, Martin. Thank you for being here in the audience.